Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay in the back? Okay. The goal here today is for you to hopefully learn a little bit and for you to have a little bit of fun this morning while we cover a lot of things with regard to the member experience. Before we do that, I want to introduce myself. My name is Bill McBride. I work for a company called Club One. We're a California-based company. We have commercial fitness centers and managed properties. Our commercial fitness centers are primarily in California. Our managed properties are all over the country. We can deliver fitness in multiple channels, corporate fitness, community centers, as well as commercial health clubs. All right, we have a total of 18 commercial health clubs, 3 contracts with JCCs, and 70-plus managed sites around the country. My experience has been from the sales perspective. I started in the industry as a trainer and a salesperson. Went to be a sales manager, went to be a general manager, a multi-site manager, a regional manager, and so on. My current role is vice president of commercial clubs for Club One. So all of our branded properties are the properties I deal with. Okay, we have clubs as small as 12,000 square feet and as large as 85,000 square feet. So it reaches the gamut. And the reason I tell you this is because this session is geared toward every possible member experience encounter that you might have that I can think of. If you're running a private studio versus a large upscale health club, there should be something in here that resonates with you in your daily approach. Okay. Before we begin, I need to do a little warm-up. This side of the room is going to be Team A. This side of the room is going to be Team B. Everybody okay so far? Okay. I'm going to say to Team A, hello, my name is Bill. And they're going to yell, can you adjust those lights back? Thanks. They're going to yell as loud as they can, hi, Bill, welcome to the club. Team A, you got it?
Yep.
Let's do a little practice session. Hello, my name is Bill.
Hi, Bill. Welcome to the club.
Thank you. Team B. This is you over here. You guys are going to say, when I say, hi, I'm Bill, you're going to yell as loud as you can, you don't belong here. Okay? You got it? Hi, my name is Bill.
You don't belong here.
Man, that was louder than the other group. You see where I'm going with that. Okay, one more time for real. Hi, my name is Bill.
Hi, Bill. Welcome to the club.
Hi, I'm Bill.
You don't belong here.
Man, I feel welcome. Okay, thanks for playing my silly little game. Today's agenda. Turn off your cell phones if you got them. Believe you get CEC credits for these sessions. We're going to go strictly the time. We'll end right on time. It's a very informal, participatory type presentation. If you want to challenge something, if you want to say, hey, that doesn't work for me, we do it this way, feel free. Okay? Ask any question. Try to stay within the realm of the topic. But anything that comes up, we can talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about the background. We're going to touch on some industry stats from IHRSA, and not from the traditional just regurgitating stats, but I want to talk about what you do with these stats and how you approach the business based on the information. A little bit about expectations and delivery systems, team alignment, consistency, and scalability. Now, at the end of the day, the purpose of this session is how can we as an industry do a better job at the member experience? How can we as an industry do a better job at connecting? And not connecting to the 15% that are going to join your club and could care less about you. You just happen to be in the right place with the right equipment. Not connecting with those people. Not connecting with the other 35% that may use it regularly, but how do you connect with everybody that comes to you wanting to embark upon the lifestyle? How do you connect with everybody that you made the promise to in the sales process? All right. I feel we do a dismal job as an industry in connecting to the broad base. The latest IHRSA stats have 15% of members 15% of the population as commercial health club members. They have 25% of the American population trying a health club in 2005. That's 75% to 85% that haven't even aren't even checking out our product. And it's a wonderful product. So we're going to talk about that member experience and that connection. That's going to be the overriding theme. Our company was founded in 1991. I've already gone over the background of who we are. We have clubs all over. We're kind of in the premium fitness space. Okay, we're in the space where we don't have a lot of food and beverage. We don't have courts. We don't have a big social component. It's full amenities, high-end equipment, high-degreed staff, but it's premium fitness. It's in the middle price point, but in the top tier of just the fitness delivery. The latest stats. Industry's growing. 4.3 million members in 2005. 15.5% of the population owns a health club membership. Okay, what I want to show you here, that's up 4.8% from last year. We as an industry grew the number of the population or number of membership year over year, 4.8%. You with me? But the amount of clubs that grew last year was 14%. So there's a 14% growth in clubs and a 4.8% growth in membership. What does that tell you? Too much competition. Yeah, that's one way of saying it. What else could it tell you? Pardon? Possibly the average membership, number of members per club is decreasing, possibly. What this tells you is that if we keep competing with each other to take each other's members back and forth, okay, I'm going to go get Equinox's members, and they're going to get my members, and I'm going to try and get some Bay Club members, and they're going to, you know, if we keep doing that, we're all going to keep going down, okay? The only way this works is if we do something different. We've got to broaden the pie, if you will, and touch more people that might not normally come into a health club, or those people that come into a health club, we've got to get them to stay and succeed and stick, okay? So our attrition rates are kind of high for the industry. We run, you know, upwards of 40, 41%. There are some operators in some areas that are a little bit more high-end clubs that are running 30, 35%. My goal is to be at 35% in our organization, okay? If I can have 35% attrition, I know that's running it pretty tight. That's doing a pretty good job with the transient nature of my markets, all right? But I'm at 41, 42%, and I'm not happy about that, okay? So when I talk to you today about what we're doing and the virtues of running health clubs according to Bill McBride, I'm not asking you to take that as any kind of gospel. My operation is just as broken as yours, okay? I assert that none of us have got it quite figured out yet, or very few of us have got it quite figured out yet on a broad, scalable basis. So with attrition rates that are very high, increased competition, the point of this stat is that we've got to do a better job at how we connect and appeal to a broader base of the American population. Does everybody agree with that premise? How we calculate them? Typically, if you do it in arrears, you take your losses for the year divided by your January 1 start number, and that's a traditional way. Some club companies will do an assumption that every month is the same, and they'll redo the annualized percentage on a monthly basis. But the annualized way that we do it is we take the attrition for the whole year divided by the January start number, and that's the number that we use. Any other questions at this point? You're also seeing growth. Some other things. 52% of the health club members are women. 48% are men. What does that tell you? Women are smarter. That's what it tells you. If you take that number, a club with 5,000 members, what's 4% of 5,000? 200. Okay. So you have 200 more members in a typical club, a 5,000 club, females than males. What if 100 of them were involved in a women's program? at $1,000 a year. What's the math on that? Okay. What if 200 were? What if they were spending $5,000 a year in program revenue? Okay. What I'm saying here is that sometimes we as an industry do things, we solve problems that might not exist. Have you ever, show of hands, put a class on your group exercise schedule because you had a great instructor that could teach something and she wanted that time slot? Show of hands. Come on, be honest. Have you ever offered something that you just knew the members were going to love and they didn't respond to it? Show of hands. We sometimes don't step back and figure out what's gonna work. You know, if we know we have more females than males, what are we doing with our female programming? Because you've got a bigger target market. All right? And you always can get these stats, and we look at the stats, but we don't do anything with them sometimes. You've got growth in the not-profit, 44% are commercial, 38% are not-for-profit, 18% are other types of clubs. Majority of our members make more than $75,000. 11% make less than $25,000. But those are the biggest growth segment in the last 12 months. Okay? So the biggest growth is at the low price point. Now, what does that tell you? Again, it's just a way to look at it with regard to how you're going to market fee-based programming. If in your club the majority of your growth is coming from lower-income members, you may do group programs, group fitness programs that are relatively cheap. You put seven people together for $5 a session, you're at $35 a session, where you might be able to do a modified type of program with less personnel that has a bigger return and appeals to that audience. So again, you know, we get all this great stats from John McCarthy and from IHRSA, and we look at them if you get them on the email, and then what do you do with it? You know, and what I'm challenging you to do is look at the stuff in your club and your numbers and say, hey, what can I do to create a better member experience based on this information? How old are these folks? 35% are 35 to 54 years old. 29 are 18 to 34. 25 are 55 and older. That's the biggest growth area. You hear it all the time. What are you doing for mature programs? This is one of my favorite quotes. It's by retired secretary of, he was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff when I got the quote from him. But there are no secrets to success. Don't waste time looking for them. Success is the result of perfection, hard work, learning from failure, loyalty to those for whom you work, and persistence. It's just not easy. It takes daily effort. How many of your members come to you and want a magic bullet? You know, I need to have a six-pack next week. I'm getting married in 3 weeks, and I really need to be able to be in a size 6. They're size 12, right? They come to you. How many times do our sales force overpromise, build that dream? We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Purpose of every business is simple. Get, keep customers. But sometimes our members aren't quite ready for the change. Okay? Sometimes they want to start a little slower. How many of you are managers or owners of your business? Okay, hands down. How many of you are sales managers, assistant managers, or fitness managers? How many of you are in operations? How many of you are in fitness, group fitness, or aquatics? Sports programming? Medical based? Okay. This is just a matrix about organizations. In our industry, we have tended to be very high in entrepreneurship. It's a relatively immature industry. It's an extremely immature industry. And startup organizations tend to be very high in entrepreneurship, low in discipline. And then you have the low entrepreneurship, hierarchical organization, very disciplined, bureaucratic. But great organizations have a strong degree of discipline and still maintain that entrepreneurial spirit of creativity. Okay. Now, why am I showing you a slide about organizational structure? Because this is one of the fundamental problems that we do anytime we're trying to scale programs across multiple sites or multiple departments. That every department wants to tweak it. Every club wants to change something about it. How many of you are in multi-site operations? Okay. How many of you have ever had a situation where a department in your club had a great, great club-wide idea, and the other departments, just for whatever reason, didn't embrace it? Show of hands. Okay. We tend as fitness professionals to be very creative, entrepreneurial. We got it all figured out. We know how we want to do it. And so what I'm suggesting here is that we take the member experience and we don't just focus on the we do need to focus on hiring the right people, but you don't just focus on the one-off that's a great person, they give great service. You make it a system. You make it a process. You add discipline to it. So every member gets the experience that you're trying to create, that it's not a happenstance based on who's on duty. Okay? How many of you know in your heart that certain times when certain employees are there, you got a rock star operation? And then other times, you cringe. Okay? I want you to share with me a couple of your worst stories about staff or coworkers. A couple of your worst things that have happened in the club from a customer service standpoint that you were just horrified. Horrified.
One of my fitness people asked one of my fitness specialists asked a member when her baby is due, and she wasn't pregnant.
Did everybody hear that?
Yeah, I've done that. Or yes, sir, and it's a ma'am.
Who else? Let me come around there. Speak loudly. Everybody hear that?
It's called boyfriend, grandpa.
One more.
Reception desk person was checking in a very unpleasant member, and as they walked away, they proceeded to comment to the next member checking in on the unpleasant mannerisms, and she referred to her husband as being just having a bad day.
Ooh. Oh, that's classic. Man, can you believe him? No, he's just having a bad day. Okay, you've all seen it, though. There's certain times when you just cringe about what's going on in your delivery. How do we manage and set up a system of experience to try to mitigate and improve that? This is a slide I've used for too many years. Need to update it. But it holds true. 68% or thereabouts, people quit businesses because of attitude and difference by the staff, okay? Nothing went wrong, you know, club's fine, everything's good, but I just didn't feel appreciated, I didn't feel loved, I didn't feel like they cared if I was there, All right. How many of you have experienced businesses where you just don't go back because they just didn't treat you very well? You just didn't feel like it mattered that you were there. Every one of us, right? And how many of you have traveled further and further from a business because you were treated so spectacularly? I go 30 minutes out of my way to go to my dentist. Okay? Best dentist office in the world. He's a great dentist, but it's the whole staff. Come in, they know your name, you know, they give me way too many goodies, you know, I never have to buy floss. You know, they give me packets and packets of floss, latest electric toothbrush, they're peddling that, showing me what I should get. But I love going to my dentist because of the way I'm treated. I feel like a VIP at the dentist. My doctor, on the other hand, as soon as I find a better doctor, I'm gonna upgrade. Okay? And my doctor's not bad. I just kind of feel like, you know, one of the patients. So attitude and difference by employees is our biggest threat. It's not the breakdown. It's not the problem. It's just people that just like check you in. Hi. That's what's killing us. That indifference. And it's all relative, right? Who gets to decide how they're treated? They do. Had a member one time at a club that was really upset because the showers were dirty. So what do you mean they're dirty? They're clean. No, they're dirty. No, they're clean. No, they're dirty. No, they're clean. Show me. Takes me in there. They were wet. She was over at the Houstonian. Moved to our market. They had somebody in the locker room that dried them every time everybody used it. Her connotation was dry shower, clean shower. Wet shower, dirty shower. Okay? Perceptions rule. All right? So it's all relative to the member's experience and what they want out of the interaction. And we've got to constantly, constantly play to that. Now, sometimes things do go wrong. We have found in our research at Club One that, and it's the same everywhere, that it's not if you agree with the member and give them what they want. It's if you respond to the member and listen to the member. Okay? It's responsiveness. I had a member 3 weeks ago that sent an evil, evil letter about me to six of my health clubs via the fax machine. I mean, it was just vicious. Okay? We as an organization had done something at this member's club with regard to a personnel issue. And this member was close to the employee. And this member was really upset that he, in his mind, he didn't like the way things were handled. So he personally attacked me and my boss and the organization. And so I called him. And I talked to him about it. And we had a nice conversation. And then I said, I'm going to have my boss call you too, because I don't want you to hear his side of everything to the degree that we'll share anything with you. And we had the conversation. He went back to the club, apologized to the GM because he had treated her poorly the day before. I called him again, talked about this letter he faxed. We got that worked out. I was going to cancel his membership for what he did. But I didn't because of our conversation. And this guy now, I believe he has a big respect for the company. I believe he does. Jane, does he? Okay. Things do go wrong. And it's how we handle those things. So this graph basically tells you about customer loyalty. People that never complain aren't so loyal. People that have unresolved complaints aren't so loyal. Loyalty goes up as you resolve complaints. Loyalty goes up pretty high if you quickly resolve complaints. What this says is that it is almost better to have something go wrong and you fix it immediately than to never have anything go wrong. Okay? Because there's this expectation line. Members truck along and they just have, yeah, this is what I get at my club. And it's kind of what, it, you know. And we meet their expectations. Something goes wrong, they drop way below the line. Now they think you're worthless, incompetent, can't run a business. And now they have no expectation of you. So when you quickly resolve it, boom, you've exceeded expectations and built brand loyalty, customer loyalty, whatever you want to call it. You've all heard about the airlines, right? Losing a bag. If the airline lost a bag, comped you a ticket, and brought you your bags to your house, what would you run around saying about the airline? Oh, my God, best airline in the world. Sarah Line lost your personal belongings. Some stranger was holding them in a car, driving them around. But you're running around, oh, great airline. Right? Because of how they handled it. So quickly resolving complaints is huge. So we get into this thing where, you know, what do you do for members? I don't believe buying members off every time they complain about something. But immediate response, comment card response, immediate response. Somebody complains to the front desk. Do they shrug their shoulders? Who's teaching today the salsa class? I don't know. What's the promotion this month? They didn't tell me. Is the sauna working yet? It was down last week. I don't know. Okay? That's what kills us. All right? Quick communication resolution to issues. This is back to the quit solving problems that might not exist. Really think about what you're doing in your clubs when you're setting up your systems with regard to member delivery. How many of you have an assessment program? Every hand should raise, right? How many of you have a program design program? And you have everything in between with regard to personal training, group training, everything else. What I really want you to do when you go back is really look at your program offering. Are you hitting exactly who you want to hit with regard to those targets? So the purpose of this slide is to make you think, when we're talking about retention programs, I've always struggled with retention being a program, as most of you have as well. It can't be a program. It's got to be a way you do business, right? You can't implement a retention program, get your retention up, and the program end. It's a way of operation. So in looking at our retention program, we did these things. We had an assessment because we knew if we onboarded people properly, they would have a higher degree of success. And we knew if they had a program design, that too would go well because then they'd have a better chance at knowing how to exercise in the club. You can't learn piano or violin with two lessons, can you? Okay, and then a lot of clubs, that's it. At the end of that, the members out there doing their own thing, unless they want to pay for personal training or some other pay program. So the concept is, what are you going to do to support that 50, 55% of the members that never get through your assessment or your program design? And in some clubs, it's 65%, right? What are you going to do to support that group? We talked a little bit about this earlier, just the amount of people that join and come out and how we constantly do the churn. And so really focusing on the A to Z process with regard to the retention. This is kind of what we're working on at Club One. We know that we have a couple breakdowns in our member connection. And the first one is how we sell memberships. Sometimes our salespeople will overpromise, and they'll really press to get somebody to join this month, right? We've got a promotion this month. Take advantage this month. How many of you run monthly promotions? Show of hands, everyone that does it. Okay. And so we're selling based on a transaction. You know, join this month, get the better deal. All right? And our salespeople, God bless them, sometimes overpromise with, hey, when you join our club, this is what's going to happen. You know, equipment never breaks down. We fix it, you know, within 24 hours. We got the best instructors in the world. We're going to do the assessment next time you come in. We're going to set you up a program. Anytime you need help, we'll be there to support you. And then the member shows up for their next workout, and the sales rep didn't schedule their assessment. And they go, I'm here for my assessment. The sales rep told me that next time I came in, I'd get my assessment. Oh, no. We got to schedule that with the trainer. You ever had that happen? Okay, so now your very first interaction with this new member, just the member's going, man, I was misled. They're not ready for me. They're not competent. They don't care. Whatever it is, whatever story's going on in their head. But it's not good. So really focusing on the sales transition. How we enroll somebody into a lifestyle of exercise adherence versus conduct a transaction to get them to join a health club. All right? And this is going to be, require a fundamental shift for a lot of salespeople. Most of us say that our salespeople are values-driven. We sell value. We say that, but then we turn around and have a zero registration fee joined by the end of the month. Okay? We turn around and sell a deal, a transaction. I'm guilty of it. Because I know that we've conditioned a lot in the marketplace to respond to promotions. And I know that I need a certain amount of net members until I fix this attrition issue. Okay? So I'm just as guilty of promotional selling. But the issue, we know we have a breakdown in somebody enrolling and transitioning into the club. In our company, before we implemented our One Start program, which is our orientation and program design, we had about 50% of the people go through the assessment. And we softened our assessment. We quit doing body fat unless the person eagerly wanted it. If somebody was obese, we're not going to pinch them, poke them, put it in the computer, print out a report showing them, you're absolutely correct. You are obese. Okay? You were right, and we've proven it. How you feel now? Okay? So we're not going to do that for a morbidly obese person. We know that they have a body composition goal, and we're going to talk about that, but we're not going to make them uncomfortable. 35% of our members would go through the second phase, the program design. Okay? So now I'm down to 65% of my members didn't get two sessions. All right? Are my numbers off? Can you relate to these numbers or not? So we have a problem with this sales transition issue. That's what we're working on with our onboarding. How are we going to get every salesperson to onboard the member properly with regard to setting them up with our trainers? Our fitness professionals, that's our secret sauce. You know, they're the ones that have the expertise and the coaching and the training. They're the ones that are going to help somebody that needs help get the results they're looking for. So the next issue we have is these fitness professionals. Once we've got somebody enrolled in the club, now they've got to be coached to get the results they're looking for. How many of your fitness professionals primarily do personal training? Show of hands. What percentage of your members pay for personal training? Who's over 50%? Over 50%. Excellent. Who's below 50%? Okay. Majority of us are below 50%. Who's below 25%? I am. Okay. A lot of clubs are 10 to 15% of their membership personal training. Equinox does this particularly well. So you've got fitness leadership, fitness professionals, that are touching only a small percentage of your members with personal training. So if 35% get two sessions with a trainer, of which some percentage of those go on to personal training, call it 20%, now you're still down to 80% of your members not really being supported. You with me? So we struggle because we have this big monster of personal training. And back in the day, salespeople like myself would do the fitness assessment, take the person through the workout, sometimes before we asked them to join, okay, to show him what we were going to do for him. And we'd follow up with them and make sure they got started the first 30 days, and we'd own that relationship. And we had much better retention and results. How many of you remember that time in the industry? Okay, and then personal training became from this service piece, it became a self-funding profit center. Okay, we could get more talented trainers with more credentials and clinical experience if we allowed them to charge more. So we started charging for personal trainers, and we started attracting higher talent. And the talent was the industry swung clinical. We have exercise physiologists. We have technicians. We have people that know anatomy and physiology and kinesiology, right? And we got this clinical approach, and our trainers made more money, dealt with less of our members. had a talented staff, but only servicing part of the membership. And we're missing this big part, 80-plus percent, 70-plus percent, pick your number, of people that aren't getting the support. So, what I think needs to happen is that there has to be a different way to connect to the members, and personal training can't be this monster in the room. You know, our fitness managers are basically personal training directors. Okay? And that's not uncommon in a lot of clubs. So our kind of process is we got to improve our sales enrollment and onboarding, first 30, 60, 90 days, and part of that is the connection. How do they connect to the club? Then those that don't connect, where do they go? They fall off the face of the earth, right? You got the members that connect, and you see them. And sometimes we get all euphoric because, oh, man, everybody in the club's happy today. But less than half of your people are in the club, right? So the people that are using your club, they've self-selected. They're okay. It's the people that you promised and that came to you for help that aren't using the club that need the help. I'm calling that at risk. Those folks that are at risk of canceling, at risk of not succeeding their goals. And if you let them go too long, they're forever gone. So we need to intervene of those at-risk people. Whatever templates you want to use, recovery calls, messaging, emails, postcards, drive over their house, pick them up. Bob, you said you wanted to get in shape. Come with me. Okay? So, and then beyond that is an appreciation or loyalty program. How many of you are guilty of your long-term members? Members been with you 10 years? You do an annual review of your accounts. You realize they're paying too little. So you send them a note. Jane, thanks for being a member with us for 10 years. I'm going to give you a dues increase. That's our loyalty program. You've been here a while. You're not paying as much as the others. We'd like to get more money out of you. Workman's comp went up again. So showing some loyalty and building brand and connection with those members that have been with you for some time, having a strategy around that, and that could be as easy as recognition, which a lot of clubs are doing well at. So what's the model in approaching this? Well, you hear it all the time. Hire the right people. Who are the right people? We recently broke down the traits that we look for in fitness professionals. And we found they were different than a lot of the fitness professionals that we had when we did this. We took all of our general managers, and then we took all of our fitness managers, and we did some workshops where we analyzed what are all the possible traits that would contribute to a successful fitness professional. And then we shaped them with what we were trying to create. So we're going to come back to this. Everybody okay? Sell the right way. We talked about that. The onboarding, building connectivity. Sometimes member connections are more important than member to staff connections. You know that, right? I won't quit your club no matter how much I hate you, because my buddies are there, right? So getting members connected to the community, the club, through lots of ways. There's a lot of things you can do for free in this arena. You know, bicycle clubs, all the different clubs. But there's even more simple things. Trainers can go out on the exercise floor, get in the middle of the floor and go, hey, I'm going to be doing a stretching session, active stretching, in the group exercise room in 5 minutes, free of charge, everybody's welcome. Okay, you get everybody in the room. Sir, what's your name? What's your name?
Richard.
Richard. And your name? Don, this is Richard. Richard, this is Don. I'm Bill. What we're going to do today is we're going to go over some basic stretches, and it'll get you warmed up before you go back out on the workout floor. I'll take them through a stretching routine, okay? Introduce them to each other. Don, what are your goals? What are you looking to do? Richard, what are your goals? You do that enough times, people are going to eventually connect with each other. Some people will, some people won't. But you're going to build connections for free, 15 minutes, floor trainer who's not doing anything, floor trainer that might be on the computer, floor trainer that might be reading the paper. How many of you have floor trainers that sometimes don't do anything? Show of hands. Okay? Now, sometimes they don't do anything because you haven't asked them to do anything. You haven't given them the expectation. All right? People tend to be shy sometimes. So getting people set up the right way to build these connections. These are the traits we came up with for our fitness team. We first broke down skills, and then we broke down values and attitude in the background, and then we narrowed down what are we looking for in our organization with our fitness team and our delivery team. And this is what we came up with. They are not in any kind of ranking. If they were, number 10 would be number 1. We want people that are team players versus me, I'm unbelievable, I'm amazing, I don't have to wear the uniform, I can wear the hat, I don't need a name tag. Do you know how much revenue I do a month? You lose me, you know how many clients are going to walk out of here? Okay, not what we're looking for. All right, team. We want people to drive revenue. We have a very high degree of expertise. And we believe that people can pay for that high level of expertise. But we need to offer a baseline of support with your dues, is what we believe in our model. Accountability and ownership. We want people that are owner accountable mentality with regard to the whole enterprise, not just their personal training target. Social skills, comfortable with people. There have been times in our organization where we have hired technicians, clinical, personal trainers that weren't real people-oriented, but they had a great resume and a great education. Have you ever seen those folks? And they have a role in our industry, more so in the medical or therapeutic, but in a commercial health club setting, which is where I speak from, social is as important as the clinical. And that's where we are in the industry. The pendulum swung to education clinician, and now it's swinging back to psychology and social skills, and it's going to be in the middle. That we want people that have the expertise. All right? So, social skills. Have you ever seen a brand new trainer hired and they were instructed to go out and service the members and they kind of went out? Hi, do you need some help today? Okay. Right? You could put me in a training uniform, send me out on the exercise floor and say, go service people. And that's not so easy sometimes. I don't want to bother them. They look like they're busy. So what do you do? Well, if you hire a new trainer, don't let him solo on the exercise floor. Have him go with your charismatic ambassador mayor trainer. Have them introduce him to everybody for the first couple weeks. Hey, Bob, this is our new trainer, Richard. He just started with us today. He's amazing. He's really specialty in cardiac rehab and cardiovascular training. The guy's amazing. I just wanted you to know who he was because if I'm not around, he'll be glad to help you. Okay? Shadow training. Don't send out a rookie that might be shy and intimidated to just go out there and flounder. Set up objectives. Don't go service, you know. Maryland Athletic Club has a success circuit. So the trainers aren't just out there servicing random people. They've got a trainer assigned to that circuit. And you all know what this model is. Now everybody that comes to that circuit is going to get support, coaching. You're going to get their pins adjusted. Going to get their card looked at. Okay? Great way to get new members started through an organized, structured circuit that's staffed. Support. But planned support, not random go out there and talk. Now, in this context, we'll come back to that. Continuous improvement. We want people that are continuously getting better at their skill set. Our big thing now, we got our top trainers now all involved in MAT training. Coach and develop others. We want coaching type mentality versus that clinician. We want people that are good at the emotional support and helping people with the goal setting and moving forward. Values driven, aligned with our organizational values. Flexible optimism. We tend to move pretty quick at Club One. We make a lot of changes. We rock people's boat. We move the cheese, whatever you want to call it. But we're constantly moving for continuous improvement, sometimes too fast, where we're just shaking things up. So if we hire people that are kind of rigid and freak out every time things change, they struggle getting on board with where we're moving, with where we're moving on the discipline aspect versus the entrepreneurial, where we're moving with scalable programs. So we want people that can adapt on the fly, that power's out, no problem. Treadmill's down, no big deal. They can just take everything in stride and keep moving forward. And then the biggest thing is desire to service others. There are some people in the fitness industry that don't really like service. All right? They like anatomy, physiology, some other things. You need to identify those people. And none of these traits are right or wrong. But you got to decide what you're looking for. And what we're looking for in this connection model is these traits. You with me? Any questions? Any jokes? Yes. Nine and ten?
No, sorry. You've got scales and values. What are the two underneath?
Oh, resources and personality, I think. If you want, come up after the session and give me your business card, and I'll email you the presentation, and you can just move it over. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Do you remember our warm-up? All right, I need a little energy boost. See how we're doing. Everybody's clear? I got to give you the refresher. Hi, I'm Bill, Team A. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the club. Hi, I'm Bill. You don't belong here. Got it? Hi, I'm Bill.
Hi, Bill. Welcome to the club.
Man, I feel good. I feel welcome. I feel like you want me here in your business. You want me to get my results. Hi, I'm Bill.
You don't belong here.
Let me go over here to a competitor where I'm welcome. Because that's what it comes down to, making people feel belonged like they belong. So can be trained, must be hired. Same thing, right? Technical skills, we can get you technical skills. We can send you to school. We can teach you how to do testing. We can teach you the presentation. Listening is a skill. Problem solving, conflict resolution, goal orientation. But we need people that are positive, bottom line oriented, accountable, visionary, honest, ownership, initiative. Okay, we need people that have these before they even show up at the door. And we all talk about hiring the right people, but then we rush the hiring process sometimes. You know, we talk about, oh, I've got to hire the right people. You hear it in every session. But do you ever sit back and say, hey, what does that mean? You can turn down a perfectly good person for a job in your club because they just don't fit with your model or the dynamic of your team. This is how we rate our employees, okay? This is a very great GE Jack Welch rating tool. Makes it real clean and simple. How many people have employees that are not on the team and are terrible performers? Show of hands. What do you do with those people? Fire them quickly. Low performers, not aligned with the team, bye-bye, go away. Not a lot of time to spend on that. What do you do with the person that, man, they're just great, Club One all the way, but they can't do their job to save their life? Can't hit the targets, can't, but man, they just are so on board. You love them to death. God, they're just great. What do you do with those people? Larry says fire them. You do fire them eventually if you can't get them where they need to go, but those people you need to train, invest in, support. If you can't get them there that way, what do you do with them? No, you get them in another job. You get them in a role they can succeed in. They're on your team. You don't want to lose people that are on your team. Man, you guys are harsh. Fire them. Okay. Now, what do you do with the high-value person and the high performer? That rock star, that person that just, man, they're just everything you want. You know, kind of like you guys. Support them. Get out of their way. Let them do their thing. What do you need? You got it? Great. So if you get all of those people, which is my goal and my job, if I have all those people working for me, I don't have to do anything. Just check in with them. You need anything? No, you're good? Great. Your job gets a lot easier, right? So get out of their way. What do you do with the high performer that's not on your team? That sales rep that just won't do his paperwork the right way but writes 89 memberships, 100 memberships a month. That trainer that knocks out gold every month but doesn't wear the uniform. What do you do with those people? Larry says, fire them. We got a business to run, Larry. We're trying to make a profit here. You coach them. Typically, it takes 90 days. And if you can't get them where they need to be in 90 days of focused effort, should be quicker than that, but that's kind of the outset, then you fire them, Larry.
Yes.
Why do you fire a top producer that's not on the team? Because it's cancerous, right? And I'm telling you, every time you ignore it, you're losing productivity in 3, 4, 5 other people, if not even more, because they're a pollution in the club. And they're creating dissension, negativity, and you can't win with that. So back in the old Disney stuff, right? Three moments, moments of magic, moments of misery, and neutral moments. This is how you got to look at retention. Every interaction a member has is they're going to make an impression of. That was good, that was bad, that was okay. Back to the responsiveness thing, moments of misery need to be mitigated, responded to quickly, neutral moments need to be improved, and you want to deliver magic every day by every single interaction. Basic expectations, three points every visit. If you have three touch points on every visit, you'll have a lot better chance of connecting to the members. If I'm in a group fitness class, I should be addressing the class before it starts, getting to know the members. Who's new? Anybody have any limitations that I need to be aware of? If you want to stay after class and talk to me about what I'm up to, that's fine. But it starts at the front desk. Service desk, connection. When they go to their space of activity, whatever that space is, if they're an aquatics person, your guard should be connecting with them before they jump in the pool. Their massage, obviously, they're gonna have a connection with their therapist. But whatever space of activity, they should have a connection point at that space, whoever's in charge of that space. And if that's a floor trainer in the fitness center, they've got to make sure they connect with every member every single time. Now, this is important for a few reasons, because we sometimes kid ourselves that we're giving good service. If I am, what's your name, sir?
Ludovico,
I'm Bill. Man, I was just noticing your outfit there. I really like your style. I can relate to how you're dressed. I'm dressed well, too. And so I'm going to hang out here with Ludovico because I can relate to him. He's just great. So what's going on with your program? Everything going well? Program. Your program going well here in the fitness center? Great. Well, good. I'll talk to you later. Okay. What's your name?
Royal.
Okay. I didn't even see Royal. Didn't even see him. But I was giving some great service over here to Ludovico, right? And this is what we do sometimes. Our training staff, our delivery team, will migrate toward those people they relate to. They'll connect with those people they connect with, right? You all do it. We do it. I do it. We all how long does it take to make a first impression? 7 seconds, 30 seconds? You make your first impression, that person's kind of like me. I'm safe over here, right? Well, every time you do that, every time you do that extra special service connection, did a good job on these folks, and you didn't do it to everyone else, you've had an exclusion behavior. You've excluded other people. They didn't get the same service. What's that say? Team B!
You don't belong here.
Team B!
You don't belong here.
You don't belong here, right? You don't belong here. Boyle doesn't belong here. Ludovico belongs here. Why? Because I talked to Ludovico and I serviced him. Boyle, not so much. Right? So you got to be careful with servicing members. You know, the personal, in-depth relationship conversations about what you're doing Saturday night, those should be back-of-the-house conversations. Parking lot, locker room. On the fitness floor, you need to treat everybody with the same level of service. Okay? So if I'm extra special servicing here, I'm excluding everyone else. Now, if I have a relationship here and I want to pursue that and, hey, you know, you're going to the game Saturday, that's great. But that's different than servicing people towards their goals on the fitness center. So not having these exclusive behaviors and being inclusive. You're on stage. Every guest is treated a certain way. Salespeople will promise things. You need to know what's being promised. You need to know if it's realistic. If you overpromise in the sales process and it doesn't materialize, you're starting the relationship poorly. You're not building trust. You can't have a relationship without trust. So make sure that your team is making the right promises. Exercise is not easy. Sometimes it's going to get tough. You're not going to get results in 2 weeks. Sometimes it's going to get harder before it gets easier. It's going to take a while to make a pattern. We're here to support you, okay? Oh, I'm gung-ho. Never exercised before in my life, but I'm going to do this 7 days a week. No, you're not, okay? You're going to do it 2 days a week until we form the habit, because I don't want you to be a flash in the pan or a burning star. I need you to have a lifestyle. I want you exercising twice a week for the rest of your life, not seven times a week for 3 weeks, and then disappear, right? Connection from day one. Selling, coaching, lifestyle, not a temporary activity. We talked about that. Personal thank you sent to every new member. That should be a given. You're selling a lifestyle, not the transaction. We talked about that. There is no shortcut, okay? People have got to get moving and eat better to get results. But they'll want the shortcut. And your salespeople will be tempted to indulge them sometimes. So you got to really know what you're promising. If I owned a health club, which I do not, I would call and personally thank every new member that came into my club. I'd say, Boyle, Bill McBride calling. Just want to say thanks for joining. We really appreciate your membership. Good or bad, I want to hear it. We're here to support you. And if my staff's not delivering on that, I want to work with them on it because we really care about what we do here. Okay? Now, what I just said is probably what everybody in this room feels. But a lot of times, and I'm speaking more in the club companies that have multiple sites that aren't owned by an individual operator. A lot of times, we have people join clubs that don't even get a welcome call from the general manager, okay? To me, that's insane. That's just an egregious, you know, how many people join your club? My average is maybe 100 across the board, 125. My top club is doing 280, 290, 300. It's 300 calls. You know, that's 10 quick calls a day for a third of the month. I mean, it's not like a big arduous task. But a basic thing that we miss in a lot of clubs. We talked about responsiveness. I'm telling you, that's the biggest thing. Member communication is crucial. This is where there's an article that called Strawberries. It was circulated in the 70s and 80s. It's a lengthy article. It's humorous. It's from the hotel industry. It's about a new hotel CEO that finds all kinds of egregious breakdowns in his hotel. No name tags. No upsell, no offering of various services, no comprehension of what the difference between a $100 room and a $150 room is. What do you think the difference between a $100 room and a $150 room is? $50. That's what the employees would say when asked. Okay? Right? So what's the difference between Pilates mat classes and Pilates performer program? What's the difference between yoga and hot yoga? What's the difference between... You know, your staff will just make stuff up. Oh, Pilates, that's like stretching. That's got some stretching in it. Swear to God, true story. her Pilates instructor stalks our salespeople. She follows around and listens to them. She does. Then she comes home and tells me, I've got a problem. She runs our program. My wife does. So, do you know what they said today? No, what did they say? So, making sure that your team has the information. And this is where I'm committed to improving in my role in my current company. All right? That every frontline person is prepared to handle the questions that come up. Back to the beginning. Steam room still down? Don't know. Class canceled? Not sure. What's going on with that fundraiser for Challenged Athletes Foundation? I don't know. Okay? If your staff's saying that kind of stuff, you got a problem. We're launching a vendor resource on our whole retention thing. I'm not here to plug the vendor, but some companies have built their own, and we've purchased an existing company that's going to marry some of our data. It's going to take all of our usage and churn it, and every 2 weeks they're going to give us a report of all the members that haven't used it on a recovery list. And we're going to email all the members that did use it on various intervals. A super user of 5 or 6 times is going to get messaging that's supporting. Hey, fantastic job last week. You're really doing a good job in starting your health club membership, blah, blah, blah. A light user or a regular user 3 times supporting. Hey, good week. Hopefully you're finding all the resources you need to succeed, blah, blah, blah. A low user, hey, want to make sure you're aware that we've got trainers that can support you in your goals. We really want you to succeed with the launch of your new membership. And a no user, a recovery message, and then they go to a recovery port. So rather than having marketing just do messaging, and IT generating low usage call lists that are a struggle to get through, because every low user on your whole membership base is a daunting task. Hey, can you call these 700 people this afternoon? Get them back in the club. Called them all. 12 of them canceled because they forgot they were members. Right? Okay. Too late. They're gone. Okay, so how do you catch them in the beginning? The ones that are engaging. Great, you're doing everything right. The ones that aren't engaging are the ones you need to focus on. So this marries marketing and IT. Usage to marketing messaging, but that's the bells and the whistles. That's reinforcement. That's nice. Okay. The real power is in a focused intervention strategy of those at-risk members. Those members that you can have an impact on. We're just launching this April 1, and this integrated approach. But we're really excited about it because it gives us a solution that connects usage with messaging with an operational task for the clubs to do that's manageable. Putting our resources, our limited resources, behind those members that can make the biggest difference. You got 30, 35, 40, 60 days to get these people connected and starting the right way. There's a lot of talk in the industry. We're participating in it on online coaching. I just gave you a technology additive to our retention model. What I want to make sure is I'm not suggesting that you rely on technology to get members to get results. Okay? They've got to get moving and eat better in your clubs to get the results. The technology supports you in the delivery of the experience on every interaction. So there is no magic bullet that you can buy, just like your members can't buy, that's going to fix retention. It really comes down to the nuts and bolts of actually delivering the service. We are the workout fairies. Group fitness, we are dealing with really trying to improve our connection with our group fitness professionals. We call them group fitness professionals or group trainers instead of group exercise instructors. Okay, they're certified, they're degreed, they're professional, they're trainers. So we have a fitness department, if you will. It's still somewhat separated because we still have two people in most locations doing two separate responsibilities. But in my utopian world, there'll be a fitness director or an athletic director or whatever you want to call it, fitness leader, that will help manage the whole fitness delivery system. All right? And our goal is trying to get away from the part-time model of freelance instructors that drop in, teach a class, drop out, teach at your competitors, teach at other clubs. They're guns for hire. Have you got a lot of those still? If you're in major markets with lots of competition, you might, because they need to make a livelihood with enough classes to support their income. And if you don't give them enough volume, enough hours, they've got to go other places. So you wind up with this diluted independent contractor type, even if you're calling them an employee, that comes and goes. So our goal is to try and hire fitness professionals that work on the fitness floor, that train in group and individually, and that also teach. So we kind of have a metric we use each month with how are we doing at each site with crossover professionals. I want somebody to commit to me and my organization, and I will do certain things for them. I'll make sure they have enough work to have a livelihood, that we'll spend some money on their training, and I'll build a connection and have a relationship with that employee versus that person just popping in and out. It doesn't matter your structure. The goal is to make sure you're connected to these people. We have clubs that sometimes the general manager does not even know somebody that might be teaching a class. They teach every other Sunday. Okay? Can you relate to that? That's a problem. Because every other Sunday, that person represents your club. So how do you communicate with your instructors? How do your instructors communicate with your members? My boss was at a competitor's club working out a couple weekends ago, and the instructor on a spin class said, has anybody seen the new general manager? And she goes, of course you haven't. I've never even met him, and they've been here 3 weeks. Okay? Now, he calls me on a Saturday to tell me about this, and I go, it wasn't one of our clubs? He goes, no. I go, why are you calling me on a Saturday to complain about competitors' clubs? Don't you have enough to work with on ours? But it was a horrible experience. This employee was just, you know, and then he went back next week and it was a different situation. But this team member was not on the team. And not only were they not on the team, they were driving a wedge between the club and the membership. What are your people saying and how are they connected? And I tell you, a lot of this is our fault as an industry, not necessarily your fault, but in my experience, that we've just ignored these people. Hire them, teach, go teach your classes, just kind of put them out there on that island. And then we say, well, why are you not connected to me? Well, because you're not connected to me. You didn't support me. You didn't ask me. You didn't involve me. You didn't even tell me what the sales promotion was this month. You're upset with me because I'm not talking to the members about what's going on in the club? Hell, if you told me what was going on in the club, maybe I'd share it. Right? So really, really connecting with your team internally. We talked about the exclusive behaviors a little bit ago. No, we've let people teach wherever they want with the exception of one club. We had a competitor come in right between two clubs, and it was literally right around the corner downtown San Francisco, and we said, if you want to stay with us, you cannot teach at this location, based on some other factors involved. But other than that one site, we do not. I think it's a viable idea, but it might require a premium. You know, I'm going to pay you a little bit more per class if you're exclusive with me, because I appreciate that exclusivity and loyalty. Or I'll support you in your CECs if you're exclusive with me. If you're not exclusive with me, I won't. You know, all of those are viable ideas. So, I pay you 5 pebbles a session to be my personal trainer, but all we ever do is swim. Now, the point of this slide and the point of this is we just talked about group fitness. Now, on the personal fitness side, if your trainers were to leave you, say your top two trainers were to leave you, and go across the street, how many of your members would leave with them? How many of you would lose members because of that situation? Raise your hands. Your top two trainers go across the street. It's just as convenient for your members. How many of you fear that some of your members will go with the trainer? Show of hands. Okay. What we have not done yet, but we're working on, is with this connection with our fitness delivery team, working more on a team approach. Okay? If I'm on vacation, I'm going to have my clients train with Bonnie. Okay? Bonnie's going to take my clients sometimes and do other things with them. We're trying to figure out how to structure this model to where people aren't financially disadvantaged by including their clients with the other trainers. Now, people get stagnant. All Bonnie ever do when we train is swim. We only swim. I'm kind of bored with swimming. All right? I need a new exercise routine. I need some spice. I need some variety. Nothing against Bonnie. She's great. But I'm going to go see Doyle and have him work with me on this 5K that I'm going to try and do, or 10K, or whatever it is. And that should be okay. But right now, some of our trainers are, hey, I'm going to be on vacation. Here's what I want you to do when I'm gone. Follow this routine. I'll be back in 2 weeks. Well, can I train with somebody else? Oh, no. You've got to stick with this program. Okay? Some trainers are protective. Scarcity mentality versus abundance mentality. If everybody is getting results in your club, in your training realm, guess what? There's just going to be more. People are going to see people getting results. I want some of that. I'd like to get those results. I'd like support on that activity. All right. So we're trying to come up with a model where instead of the independent trainer keeping their client base, there's more of a team approach. There's some restaurants in Washington, D.C. Anybody from Washington? Show of hands. I knew Nancy's here. No, she's not. Great American restaurants. Mike's American Grill, Carlisle Grand, some restaurants. They team weight. Okay? They team weight, and they have signals and language that if I come by and your drink is empty, I'm going to ask you, would you care for another drink? You're going to say yes or no. If you say yes, I'm going to flip my napkin face up so everybody knows that she's been taken care of by me and they're not going to bother her. If she says no, I'm going to flip the napkin upside down. So everybody knows she's empty, but she's okay. All right? But it's a team approach, and it's an unbelievable model, and they're extremely, extremely successful, and they have the most consistent service delivery system of any restaurant chain I've ever seen. Because they operate as a team, not as a bunch of individuals. So just challenging, sir, a question? Just challenging your model with regard to encouraging team support of your whole membership base. Did you have something, ma'am? Any questions? Comments? Yes, sir, ma'am. Pardon? If you had the trainers operating their own business, you would have to work through that challenge. It's kind of the studio model if you go back and I buy personal training at XYZ Fit and they assign the trainers every time I come in. It's kind of that model but watered down because I still want the connection and relationship with the critical few, but I might have the one-star orientation with one trainer and the program design with another trainer, and I might have an incentive for the trainer to still get compensation if it's a substitute. We're working through how we're going to approach it from a compensation standpoint, but we keep coming back to an incentive for the team based on other things other than just revenue, based on frequency, percentage of members using, that kind of thing on the connection. We're going to get that at in just a second. So, back to, yes, sir.
I just thought of a question there. What if you have trainers, or maybe you've got a trainer who's more senior, who's been with you
hey, I'm going to have you train with Bob this week while I'm gone. Bob's expertise is in such and such such. He's not quite as experienced in functional training as I am. His rates are lower than mine, so you're going to get a little break. But Bob and I have met, and he knows exactly the goals you're going to work on. I'm going to introduce you to him after our session today so you know who he is and can kind of connect with him before you come in next week. And then, you know, so something to that effect. But this is kind of, what is old is new again? You know, this is kind of how I see it. We talked about it before, back in the day, you know, where you serviced. Fitness leadership became about driving PT, driving personal training. What I'm proposing and what we're working on is making it about connection. Your fitness manager is in charge of connection, not personal training revenue, not anything else. How many of you have introduced a program that didn't quite come out of your fitness manager's role? Maybe an outside program that was fee-based. And it wasn't well-received because there was a perception that it was going to cannibalize and cost me clients. Anybody ever seen that? You introduce a new program, you know, anything. Any external program that's fee-based. And you find trainers talking to their members. No, that's not as valid as what we're doing. You'll get much better results with what we're... And they wind up sabotaging and working against the organization and the goals. Okay? And what I've found every single time, I've launched new programs, and I've done a ton of them. Internally developed programs, externally purchased programs. Every single time, there is a certain group of people that just will not want to accept it. And it's show me. Okay? I spoke about my wife running our Pilates program. She had a Pilates model, right, that she wanted to introduce. And I was selling, in 2003, we were selling about, $200,000 a year in Pilates revenue. And of that, we made $2,000. 1%. Is it even 1%? No. Yeah, 1%. 1% net on $200,000. It was a completely unmanaged circumstance. It was just people doing Pilates. So every time she came in, the existing Pilates people were like, oh, no, oh, no. And the fitness trainer's like, oh, no, oh, no. And one by one, she did 10 clubs with full-blown reformer studios. Now the thing does, you know, last year it did $600,000 with a 34% net, 34%. You know, now we're getting real money on something that was completely unmanaged circumstances. But every single club, until we hit a threshold of about the seventh club, sixth club, once we hit about the sixth club and all the other GMs saw that, oh, my God, it works. Then they bought in and wanted it, and then it got a little smoother. But whatever the program is, you've got to make sure that you've got that involvement, connection with your team about why you're doing it and how it's not going to cannibalize. And sometimes it requires a lot of showing. But our fitness leadership was about personal training. That's the point. And what I'm suggesting is that fitness leadership needs to be about connection of the entire membership base and the tools needed to support that new member. So instead of personal training being the be-all, end-all, big monster revenue driver, it is critical and important, but it is one of many tools for that new member. And the toolkit is Pilates, group fitness, series programming, lifestyle programs, sports, aquatics, wellness program, whatever you've got in your toolbox at your club. That fitness leadership needs to be the catalyst and connection of how this member is going to fall into support, all right? Rather than the member trying to stumble into finding a way, taking it. And so what I'm looking at is going back to the old school where there are fitness professionals that are hired to be service ambassadors, coaches, whatever, and they will filter the new member towards the tools versus personal training competing against the tools and the member having to stumble in. So this connector, this ambassador, this coach, is going to take the new member and say, hey, this is how you're going to succeed here. You're going to take these three free programs that are on the Group X schedule. I suggest you get involved in our FitLink circuit to start out for the first 2 months. I suggest you consider a consultation with our nutrition. And they're going to map it out for the person to launch and succeed. Okay? Now, that means that this person can't be compensated strictly on PT revenue. They've got to be compensated on another metric. And we're working on that. usage, percentage of members that are in the club, because the key is to get that 50% that never engage. We've talked a little bit about that. Going back to your population and making sure your programs are appealing to what is desired and needed with your clubs. This member experience piece, it goes full circle. It's maintenance, it's housekeeping, it's aquatics, it's every department head being connected and controlling all the things that you can control. Sometimes we get a little store blind. We don't see all the things that are in our club. You know, when you come back from vacation, you walk through your club and you go, oh my God, this place is a mess. Anybody ever done that? But it was fine last week when I left. Well, you're getting a different perspective. If a light is out above the front desk, what does that mean? Huh? Lights out above the front desk in your lobby. What does that mean to the member? Two things. You're stupid, i.e. incompetent, or you don't care, right? You're either incompetent or you don't care. That's all it means. It's a light bulb. 2 seconds to fix, all right? So really focusing on every touch point, every single touch point going through your facility. We have an inspection process we do quarterly, which is kind of a whole club audit. I'm sure most people have a similar kind of thing. But going through all the different things. To beat store blindness, if you do a walkthrough of your club, you can break your club into quadrants. I want you to humor me for just a second as we wrap up. I want you to look in this room. I want you to first look down at your feet and then straight up to the ceiling. And really pay attention to the details of what you see. Who's got something? Two lights out. Boom, boom. Who's got something? What do you got? Right. Did you notice that before you did that?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't.
You
did. No, I didn't. I was focused on you. Left to right now. Left to right. And back right to left. What'd you see? Give me something. Yes, sir.
Covers missing off outlets on the wall.
Okay, covers missing. Anything else? Yes. Okay. You do that little exercise when you do a walkthrough, you'll see things you don't see otherwise. All right? You're now not looking at your club. You're looking at spaces for anything that's disheveled. You'll find wet spots on ceiling tiles. You'll find snags on carpet. You'll find marks on walls. You'll find lots of little things that you don't notice. Okay, one more time. Hi, I'm Bill.
Hi, I'm Bill. Welcome to your club.
Okay, that was pretty weak. Okay, one more time. Hi, I'm Bill.
Hi, I'm Bill. Welcome to your club.
Okay, now you guys, now that you've been all educated by me today, you guys are going to welcome me to the club too. Hi, I'm Bill.
Hi, I'm Bill. Welcome to the club.
One more time.
Hi, Bill.
Very good. Round of applause for yourselves. If you'd like a copy of the presentation, bring me your business card. I'll email it. If you have questions, I can take questions. Thank you very much.